Hey everybody, Charlie Kirk here. Are you new to investing and have savings you need to protect? Right now, the Middle East war, the Ukraine war, and maybe Taiwan soon. You need a playbook that is safe. Allocate some gold right now. Shield your savings with Noble Gold Investments IRA. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com. When fear reigns, gold protects the wise. Noble Gold Investments offers a free 5-ounce America Beautiful coin with new IRAs this month. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com right now. noblegoldinvestments.com, the only gold company I trust. Hey, everybody. Happy Saturday. This is a very spicy episode of Thought Crimes. So get your popcorn. Maybe you're on a road trip. Maybe you're working out. You're going to love it. We don't cover a lot of topics here, but we cover Ben v. Candace rather extensively and truthfully. And then we talk about Elon Musk and his tweet about white people. It's honestly one of my favorite conversations we've ever had at Thought Crimes. It flows beautifully. I think you'll really enjoy it. Email us as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Support Turning Point USA today at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Go to charliekirk.com and click on the members tab. That's charliekirk.com and click on the members tab. Email us as always, freedom@charliekirk.com, and attend America Fest. That's amfest.com, amfest.com. Today we have Tyler Boyer, Blake Neff, Jack Posobiec, and of course yours truly. And again, if you want to marry Blake Neff, email us your resume, freedom@charliekirk.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the loan experts I trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. All right, everybody, it is thought crime plural, but you can commit thought crimes here. Now, I got to warn all of you, this episode is about to get very spicy and mostly peaceful. Blake, welcome back.
Hello, Charlie.
Blake is now a cultural phenomenon, okay? It's just there's no getting around it. He's an installation. Tyler, are the Suns above 500?
I think we're at 500. No, maybe at 500 now.
I do have to say, I think the NBA until you get the playoffs waste of time. I love this in-season tournament idea. I'm a sucker for it. I think it's actually creative and interesting.
I don't get it.
Like, it's total marketing.
What's the prize? No, they just get money for it?
No, the whole goal, they're doing in-season tournament games on Tuesday and Friday. It's smart.
Vegas, right? Everyone's in Vegas.
Well, no, they play them at home, and then the final tournament's in Vegas.
I kind of love, at least they're trying to make the NBA interesting.
They're trying to make it into something during football season, because football's every other day. So Tuesday and Friday is now NBA day.
I don't like the NBA. I appreciate the creativity because the NBA is so boring. Jack, Welcome back. Okay, so we have tons to cover. Who wants to be our leader here on this? Because we're starting with Ben and Candace, right?
Oh, of course we have to start with Ben and Candace.
So, Blake, just facts, what's going on, Ben
and
Candace?
So we'll start with the most basic facts, and just in case Charlie hasn't kept track of this. So Ben Shapiro is a well-known conservative voice. He runs an organization called The Daily Wire. He's not very tall. And he has an employee named Candace Owens. And they have a difference of opinion about a major issue of our time, which is I can't really tell what this difference of opinion is about. It's sort of just passive aggressive, apparently. But
well, I can explain that.
But also, Blake, let's be clear. This has been bubbling up over the last couple of weeks. We've kind of seen this schism. This is not overnight,
of
right?
Of course. So it's, of course, about Israel, Gaza, ultimately.
Uh-huh.
And so Ben Shapiro is about what you'd expect on the Israel-Palestine issue. He's very pro-Israel, very pro-Israel's response.
Yeah, effectively the IDF.
Effectively, right? Yeah. He's effectively ultra, you know, whatever, ultra MAGA, but ultra IDF, whatever. And Candace hasn't said that much. She's just sort of, she's kind of been like us. She's been a little critical of some of the stuff where, you know, civilians have died or they've hit churches or hospitals. And she's like worried about this, but she's not pro Hamas.
Well, there's two things in particular that I want to get to, Jack. And I say this only because I have
I've been texted relentlessly because I defended Candace yesterday, and a lot of Jewish Americans who I love, I have a heart for the Jewish people, said, Charlie, you're out of line. I said, okay, well, what did Candace do? So this is what I don't, by the way, I don't think that their anger or their rancor is even close to being justified. Let me be honest. So the first one is this, okay? And we can get this up. I'm going to put text this to you guys. First one is Candace Owens texted this. No government anywhere has a right to commit genocide, comma, ever. I cannot believe this even needs to be said or is controversial, considered the least piece controversial to state. This is on 11-3. So this was back on November 3rd. Dave Rubin responded, as I'm sure you know, Candace, the Palestinian population. Candace then said, what's amazing about this is I did not name any country in this tweet. I just said genocide is wrong. Always. This is not a controversial stance. Interesting how you interpreted it.
And that's a little like.
I mean, it is
interesting. You thought that way. Like, it sounds like something like, you know, those nerds will say on internet forums, which like, you know,
you ever spend time with,
you know, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, of course I did.
Yeah, but this is standard Reddit gaslighting.
Yeah, yeah, total Reddit. I mean,
that's what the internet's all about.
True. But it's
like,
so
what fun is the internet without gaslighting?
No offense, like Candace, I don't think you would have made that tweet if there were not, you know, an Israel-Gaza war going right now. It's not like she just woke up and tweeted no reason.
Then the third element was she tweeted out something. We'll get the tweet around the Princess of Jordan. There was something like how the
Queen of Jordan. Queen Raina.
Oh, thank you. The Queen of Jordan, where she said that the term anti-Semite is being thrown around too generously. And that, by the way, I totally agree with that. I think that's totally right. So, Jack, am I missing anything? Those are three or four different elements, right, of a bubbling up schism. And then we'll get to the, you know, as it stands at the recording of this show, a complete a civil war, whatever you want to call it, between Ben and Candace. Jack, what are we missing?
Yeah, no, and I think she's done, and on her new podcast, you know, she had done some monologues as well, where are pretty similar, I would say, to what you would hear on the Charlie Kirk Show or Thought Crime or Human Events or even War Room, where instead of doing this full on, like calling for donations for the IDF, we've been asking serious questions about the geopolitical implications of escalation of the crisis, the fact that U.S. bases are currently under attack, U.S. bases that are throughout the Middle East. Now, we don't necessarily agree with U.S. having that many bases in the Middle East. We're not saying that we promote that. We're just saying that's what it is. We're also talking about the implications of what were to happen if Iran or any of the other proxies of the Muslim Brotherhood or Iranian-based forces start to get involved in a wider dispute, and how this would kick off a potential two-front crisis while the U.S. is currently involved in the proxy war in Ukraine, which is just a complete fiasco, an absolute disaster that's going on right now. And so, you know, we've also asked questions about the security posture of Israel vis-a-vis the IDF and Bibi Netanyahu prior to October 7th, asking how could such an attack, such an elaborate, sophisticated, obviously well-planned attack take place when we know that Bibi Netanyahu has always portrayed himself as sort of the, you know, the hardline security, I'm going to protect everyone candidate. This has been Likud's entire raison d'etre, their entire mantra for the past 30 years. So the idea that this happens on his watch, also something, by the way, that President Trump has called out. And to be fair, a lot of people in Israel have called out as well, are really seen as failures of Netanyahu's administration and breakdowns within the intel apparatus there, the security apparatus of the Israeli state on Netanyahu's watch. And yet Ben Shapiro basically, and I want to be clear because there's this video. So the video that popped off is really the inciting incident, at least of this iteration of the conflict. It's not clear that this was a public event. It looks like it was a private event. I know that we have the video. I'm sure we're going to be getting to it.
This was the Pearl Harbor of the whole deal. Blake, set the stage.
All right. So this appears to be – this came out on Tuesday. It's not clear when it was recorded, but this came out on Tuesday. I guess let's just hop to it. If you're mystified by the appearance of things, it appears that Ben Shapiro is standing on some sort of object, perhaps a table, perhaps a couch, perhaps some extremely tall Ron DeSantis heels. But we want to set the stage for that because it could be a very confusing image otherwise. So let's roll 85.
Yes, the question is about Candace Owens. I think her behavior during this has been disgraceful. I think that her faux sophistication on these particular issues has been ridiculous. It's not faux sophistication, it's ridiculous. Everybody can see the moves that she's making and the things that she's saying, and I find them disreputable.
Okay, look, I got to say something, but go ahead.
Faux sophistication, yeah. Disreputable, yeah. Ridiculous. That's a lot of stuff to say.
Let me tell you my biggest problem with this whole thing, and Tyler will totally agree. You don't act like this is a leader, Ben. This is not how leaders act. You don't do that. If someone's on your payroll, someone you're building a company with, you don't go in front of donors or friends and you bash someone. Leaders go in private and you hash it out. Or you say, we're done. Right, Tyler? That is, if an executive at Turning Point would go and bash one of our people like that in front, it would be
publicly on video.
You'd be done. That is not good behavior. By the way, Ben has to be held to a higher standard. Ben is a business owner here. She's an employee.
Yeah.
And so
he's the boss.
And so you know what he should have said is like, boy, we're on different planets. I'm not going to comment on that. We're trying to solve it privately. You don't do that. That's been my biggest problem here. And having dealt with plenty of fun things over the last decade, right, Tyler?
Well, we've dealt with a lot of influencers, people who have worked for us.
Where we don't always see things the same way.
Every day. Every single day. They're like literally every day, including Candace.
Correct.
We've worked with Candace before, had many situations. I'll say this from my own perspective, which is like, you're going to disagree. You disagree with your own spouse. We talk about this all the time. We have people on our staff and at Turning Point Action, we actually endorse candidates. So this is different than even TPUSA. We'll have a disagreement. There'll be people that come into our atmosphere that don't like a candidate as much as Charlie likes a candidate, or I like a candidate, or somebody else likes a candidate, or Jack. Something Jack says on his show, something Charlie says on his show. If you go out every time and escalate a situation, you're going to ultimately just completely disassemble what you've built.
It is bad leadership. I don't think anyone has done that take yet. That is bad leadership. Forget all the ideological stuff, okay? Yeah. I think Ben is breaking all the rules of leadership because he looks at this, right, Blake, as like a religious crusade. And I don't mean that negatively. This to him is so personal.
It really has been that way just for a lot of people. And I think it's understandable. It's extremely traumatic. We've made the comparison to Israel's 9/11. And I think we, you know, the older ones among us, like me, can remember 9/11 and how nationally traumatic it was. And we did a lot of things that in hindsight we regret, you know, got rid of all civil liberties, all that sort of thing. It's very easy
Patriot
to overreact.
Act, DHS, TSA, and, all that stuff.
You know, so you can hardly blame him for being extremely upset, except for, you know, as some people have pointed out, this is a different country. And we're very upset on their behalf. And that's kind of been an undercurrent to this, is a lot of people saying, okay, look, we understand you're very upset, but this is not the United States.
So then it escalated further, which here's my theory.
Should we read the tweets first?
No, that's what I'm going to get to.
All right, sure.
But let me set the table, because I don't think anyone has said this either. So Candace goes on to Tucker and films an interview. Okay. And here's my theory. Candace bashes Shapiro and Tucker. She then texts somebody the Daily Wire saying she bashed Ben. And then Ben preempts the Tucker interview by 30 minutes. You look at the timestamps.
It was insane how quickly this happened.
This was not a mistake. Ben got a tip because Candace probably said, OMG, because love Candace, but she's probably like.
She tweeted that that it was dropping.
No, but I think she told people privately she hit Ben, okay? That she was like, I went after Ben, like this is going to be big. Ben gets, and so Ben wants to play offense. So then he decides of all the
wants
tweets.
Wants to do a six-day war.
Yeah, more than that. And honestly, I think this is really, and so that's not true. So the Candace and Tucker recorded yesterday, okay, on Wednesday, okay. So someone in the chat, I know that for a fact. Oh, let me finish this. So anyway, the Ben then comes out of all the tweets, goes after Jack. The tweet where Candace Owens tweets about blessed are the peacemakers.
Yeah. So we've got that. Bring up number 81. And so it's blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Blessed are they when they persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. That's, of course, from the Beatitudes, Sermon on the Mount, Gospel of Matthew. Then she jumps ahead a few verses, still from the Sermon on the Mount. No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. And so she tweets that. And then number 82, Ben responds shortly after. Does someone want to imitate Ben's voice? Maybe I'll do it. Candace, if you feel that taking money from the Daily Wire somehow comes between you and God, by all means, quit. And
that's pretty good.
Yeah. And so
Hold on. I got to keep doing. I'm sorry. Hold on. She ain't taking money from you, Ben. She's earning money. Okay. What are you accusing her to be a thief? I got to be honest. What are you doing here, man? Candace, if you feel like taking money, whoa, taking money. Does she not provide a podcast that you monetize?
Yeah.
You employ her to drive value for your company.
Subscriptions.
Are you exactly? By the way, how many times have I been pushed a Daily Wire Plus ad with Candace's face? Candace, if you feel that taking money, I don't. Jack, am I nitpicking here?
Think it's nitpicking a little bit.
Jack, am I nitpicking?
Well, I get what you're saying in the sense of she is an employee of the Daily Wire. And I don't know the specifics of the contract or however it works out, rev sharing or everything. But you know, just from the face of it, her name, her visage, her work, her profile, it's all done in furtherance of promoting the Daily Wire in the same way that, you know, here on Thought Crime, we promote it using our platforms, et cetera, et cetera. So all of the work that she's done lately for Daily Wire Plus, her great George Floyd documentary, her counter documentary to Making of a Murderer, which dropped recently, these were huge events, and they all require Daily Wire Plus signups for anyone to, and I was involved in promoting both of those. I participated in, I was asked to by Daily Wire to promote, and I was more than happy to because I thought they were fantastic pieces of work. And so the idea that she's taking money while this, and not explaining it as if it's some sort of actual mutually beneficial contract, I think it is a little disingenuous for him to say that she's taking money from the company when that's obviously not exactly what the confines of the relationship
are. So we might be nitpicking. I don't think I am. But that's a separate issue. So anyway, what goes on here though is then Ben escalates this publicly, in my opinion, because he knew the Tucker hit was. Do you agree with that, Blake?
It's possible. I don't know.
It's too coordinated.
They had to suspect this. And yes. Then, so 83, this chart. Is minutes before the interview drops.
The what?
Now we have 83. This is her response to
yes,
Ben.
Yes, well, because this was, again, this was all right before Tucker drops.
Right before, but before we get to Tucker itself, we should have her response.
Yes,
this is the
please,
last thing that
which
hits,
I think is an excellent response.
Yeah, so 83, and she says, you have been acting unprofessional and emotionally unhinged for weeks now. Weeks. And we have all had to sit back and allow it. That's interesting. We have all had to sit back and allow it and have all tried to exercise exceeding understanding for your raw emotion. But you cross a certain line when you come for scripture and read yourself into it. I will not tolerate
There's
it.
Another tweet where she says the Bible is not about you.
Yes, but, she does say that.
But this is a really interesting point. Like, I don't think people understand how interesting this point is. And this is a real thought crime statement here. So I need to be very careful about what I'm about to say. I have lots of Jewish friends. Charlie has lots of Jewish friends. The moment you bring Jesus into a debate, it is a like bar none, convo over, total offense, anti-Semitic comment, because you know they're really offended by the fact that basically what you're trying to say by quoting anything biblical, anything Christian, is that they murdered Jesus, right? And like, this is the bigger, and this, I'm telling you, there's multiple examples of this in scripture where they've taken a scripture, completely pulled it out of context and said, what you're trying to say with this scripture is anti-Semitic because the Jews killed Jesus. And that's like the deeper conversation here. Anytime you get an argument, and this is so funny to me because I've seen a couple of these examples where like Christians don't even think that way. most Christians don't even have that many Jewish friends, especially if you're from the South, right? And like, that's just, they just don't even have any kind of context or understanding. If you're from the Northeast, you have a little bit of a better understanding. But the moment this happens, and so this is actually part of the subtext, I think, in this tweet, which is like, the moment that she says something and he's paying attention, and she's been going after him, he's been going after her, whatever's been happening for weeks, months, probably years, who knows. This is now, again, reading themselves into the conversation. I've seen this happen all the time. You'll see it all the time. So anyways.
Well, and
it's not anti-Semitic to quote Bible tweets. And by the way, love all my Jewish friends. Love all our friends. We have many. We've been the most pro-Israel in the entire conservative movement.
We
spend millions of dollars on pro-Israel. Yes. Millions of dollars, right?
For Charlie? What? To be called anti-Semites.
Just to be Christian. Like, that's just is like at the heart. Like, there has to be some meeting of the middle there. And I think Ben is completely in the wrong by trying to read.
He's totally wrong. Jack, please. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think what's going on here, and Tucker gets into this later in the interview, and a lot of it gets extrapolated out, is really that, you know, I don't necessarily think that Candace has come down and said she opposes the IDF going after Hamas, or if she's, you know, pro October 7th and the attacks on the kibbutzes that took place there. I think what we really have here is this is a fault line for a lot of people on the right that comes down to sort of more of that America first versus heavy American interventionism, you know, some people would say neoconservative type of stripe that exists on the right in America today, in American conservatism today. Whereas an America firster will look at this and say, yeah, that's a policing action. I support Israel going and do that. Go take care of business. Go get rid of those criminals. Take care of what you got to do. Keep your people safe. All for it. But someone who's more on the neoconservative side, who's probably supporting Nikki Haley, who's probably supporting intervention in general, you know, not a full on Lindsey Graham, but you guys know what I mean. You know, they're saying we need to send more money to Israel. We need to send bombs, bullets, weapons, whatever it needs, whatever we have to get into. You saw Ron DeSantis getting into this, and I'm not trying to make it political, but Ron DeSantis jumped onto this train at one point, and his spokesman tried to claim that they were sending weapons somehow, this weird, you know, conflated, and it was totally debunked, by the way. But they tried to claim that Ron DeSantis and the administration of Florida were sending weapons and body armor to Israel to fight Hamas. And I think a lot of people, Tucker included, are looking at it and saying, look, you know, that's their fight. Why don't you have the same type of emotional response when it comes to the American people? Why don't you have the same? And Tucker makes the point about fentanyl. He says, why don't we see this type of emotional response when it comes to the fentanyl deaths, when it comes to Candace talks about wounded warriors. You could also get into the 22 American veteran suicides per day. We just don't see that same level of emotional response from our American political leaders, who, by the way, are supposed to be on the right when it comes to the American people, when it comes to, and this fall, keep in mind, this comes in line after the 18 months, almost 2 years now, of the Ukraine war, where we saw our politicians were so all in the tank for, we've got to fight Ukraine, this is the fight for freedom, but people at home, forget about it.
Yeah, so go ahead, Blake.
Oh, no, so it's just, we've got to... So I think we've set this all up, and now we get to the real hammer thing, which is, you were saying she set this up, that she, you know, got Ben to attack her, you know, 6 day war style just before the Tucker interview drops. But the Tucker interview is recorded before the latest stuff. So were you thinking that she set that up because then it makes everything she says in the interview work better?
Or? No, I mean, again, no, the sequence is just this, is that Ben's tweet about Candace resigning was because he got a tip that Candace's and Tucker's interview was coming, and he was involved in that interview, and he wanted to play offense calling for her resignation and not be totally caught on his heels.
Mm-hmm.
That is, Jack, you agree with that, right? That seems to be...
Well, I'll just say that... The way I read that is probably because, and I'm sorry, but, you know, and nothing but, and I'm not trying to like start anything, but we remember all the contract dispute to the Daily Wire that came out with the Crowder situation, and Crowder had that fantastic scoop with the Nashville manifesto. And so I have to imagine, and Candace, by the way, went full to bat for the Daily Wire more than Ben did.
She defended Ben on Tim Pool. That's right.
And in defending them. But when I think about the contract that they wanted Crowder to sign, which by the way didn't seem all that insane to me.
I didn't like the way Steven handled all that.
He didn't like it. That's fine. But again, this is to your point, Charlie, you know, stuff that should be handled behind closed doors, not out in public. I have to imagine that Candace is obviously under a contract that's of similar terms. And as such, if the Daily Wire, whether it's Ben, whether it's somebody else, no longer wants her to be there anymore, I'm sure, look, we all know Candace. She does not come. She's not a cheap date. Let's put it that way. She's not a cheap date. So they're definitely paid top dollar to get Candace to sign with the Daily Wire. That's why, of course, you know, we offered her millions. We offered her millions for thought crime. But, you know, what can I say? Daily Wire came in a little bit higher than we did. And
that's
so
not true for the record. Out. Media Matters that there's no truth to that.
But then so
it's 100% true.
But anyway, so this.
So you know what I'm saying? She's under obligation. Daily Wire is under obligation. It's too expensive for them to get rid of her. It would also cause too many problems. So of course, Ben comes out and says, "Why don't you just quit?" And the thing that I've just got a little bit of nagging thought in the back of my head is, you know, is that something that potentially he wants in that moment is for her to walk away so he doesn't have to deal with it.
I think he totally wants her to resign. So let's go to some tape here. Let's go to there's several. Let's play cut 91. So this is the actual Tucker Candace interview. And just so everyone is clear, this has just dominated right wing circles now, right? People are
everything here. Yeah. Tens of millions.
Yes.
Hits.
Play cut 91, please.
COVID vaccine. Really? I didn't remember that.
Yeah. He was pro the COVID vaccine. I was anti the vaccine. You know, we were all idiots for not getting the vaccine. So that's totally fine. I am totally open to people having a difference in opinion.
Right.
I would hope that amongst colleagues that it would always be civil disagreement. And I would never in a private event stand on a table and talk badly about Ben.
It's a little weird. So he was on the left on those three biggest issues of our time. Her head would hit. Is what you're saying?
He has converted his opinions. He's accepted responsibility. He said, you know, I was wrong about the vaccine.
Oh, good.
He is, you know, obviously pro pharma. His mom's a doctor. And I say to people, I'm very aware of my perspectives on big pharma. And yes. I talk about it on my show openly. And I think that that's a tremendous credit to the Daily Wire that they allow a difference of opinions. But I, as I said, hope that it would remain respectful.
So just so we're clear, Ben Shapiro back in 2020 was going after Elijah Schaefer and said, quote, in other words, get the vaccine, dopes. And he also was strangely friendly with Gottlieb, who was the Pfizer FDA guy that went back and forth. And yeah, I mean, he was a big pusher of the vaccine.
Scott Gottlieb, yeah.
Yeah, Ben was also a very big pusher and still is of the Ukrainian war effort and has been. And also, I think he was pretty good on BLM or race, right?
So, yeah, so Tucker says wrong on the three biggest issues. So was it he pro-war in Ukraine?
He still is.
Yeah, yes, okay. So yeah. I assume Ukraine's
and
one.
And then COVID.
And then COVID. And is the third one George Floyd BLM?
No, I think Ben's actually been traditionally very good on race. I mean, that has been actually one of his strongest topics. He's never really wavered on that, honestly. I would imagine it's election integrity is probably the third.
Could be,
if I were to guess.
He did attack Derek Chauvin initially over the George Floyd situation.
Yeah, I know, but I want to give Ben credit. For years, he actually carried a lot of the more base takes against BLM, I will say. It's a great he received back in 14, 15, 16, he was one of the sharper critics against BLM and all these race hoaxes and stuff. But I don't know if that remains. I don't know. But anyway, I don't know which three issues Tucker's talking about there. Okay, let's continue though, because it was probably one of the most interesting days on the internet ever, right, Blake? I mean, you have Ben Shapiro and Candace fighting. Well, again, just to remind you, Ben Shapiro pays Candace. This is such bad form. You don't do this, okay? You do not do this.
There's a bigger issue here too, which is like he's talking about when you employ someone, it doesn't matter who it is, but certainly one of your most highly paid, most valuable employees, like you're giving yourself a lot of problems, Charlie, when you're going out and talking about basically employee issues, telling people to quit. You can't do some of those things. Like you just can't. Like, so you're, and again, I don't know how their contract's structured exactly and everything else, but like, he's setting himself up for like a long term multi-million dollar, you know, fight.
Why doesn't he just go meet with her? Like, go be a leader and be like, Candace, let's work this out.
But he's painting himself into a corner a little bit by talking about these things publicly. Like Turning Point would never let you do this, Charlie, because it'd be like,
she says something on this. Let's actually play clip 90.
Okay, great.
I think that's fair. And just for clarity, because I really don't know, is he your boss? Does he?
I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about Ben's involvement. He's not the CEO of the Daily Wire. He is not making the decisions of the Daily Wire. And I do want to make it very clear, because people are like, how could you possibly stay at Daily Wire after this? I have a very good relationship with the co-CEOs of the Daily Wire. I don't want that video to become a reflection of how the Daily Wire works and the Daily Wire operates, because I have had a very good experience with the CEOs and, you know, love Michael Knowles, love Matt Walsh, Andrew Klavan. We all get along really great.
So here's 94, the last time Candace, Ben, and I were all pictured together. There you go. See? That's... I don't know why.
Charlie, what's going on with your Rivellino test right there, man?
Yeah,
green line.
Let's put some green lines on that. Yeah,
can we get the green lines up, folks?
I don't know why people are laughing.
Because it's funny, Charlie.
Hey, when you're with,
it's funny.
And Ben is actually standing on a box there. You wouldn't realize it, but you got to lean in when you're with people that are half your height.
You guys have the same belt. What's up with that?
Coordinated. Anyway, sorry. people were wondering.
Yeah, so. But I guess this will help set up the next topic too, which I think a lot of people could guess what the next thing will be, which is, you know, so it starts off as this fight between Candace and Tucker, but it's also becoming symbolic for, I think, a larger thought crime dispute that is happening in the wake of kind of the new Gaza war, which is, let me see which number it is, because our numbers are a bit jumbled
up
here.
Tucker also said something similar in his interview too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of this, all of a sudden, ADL's on defense.
Yeah, they're on defense, but, you know, it's as we've highlighted, which is, you know, a lot of people have jumbled up their opinions because of this recent conflict. They've realized a lot of people on the left hate us. A lot of stuff is going on. And, you know, so we have donors who are pulling donations from this or that nonprofit, or especially colleges. And a lot of us are very grateful for that. But what we see in clip number 92 here is Tucker, and a lot of others are asking, okay, that's great, but okay, why is it that this is when it started? And they're like mad about the timing of it. Let's just play number 92.
However, then I thought, well, wait a second, if the biggest donors at, say, Harvard have decided, well, we're going to shut it down now. Where were you the last 10 years?
And that's the
white genocide. You were allowing this. And then I found myself really hating those people, actually. That you're okay with that? On what grounds were you okay with that?
And this is what I've been trying to explain to the pro-Israel lobby, that what you are seeing as lack of support is people that are asking the question is, where were you as we have endured all of this?
You were paying for it, actually.
Right.
You were paying for it.
You were paying for it.
Because you were calling my children immoral for their skin color. You paid for that.
And
so why shouldn't I be mad at you? I don't understand.
Wee Lord!
He said shut it down. ADL's not going to like that one.
Why is that,
Blake? Why do you say that?
Candace said the smartest thing here, which is I have received, not hundreds, dozens of really well-meaning messages and calls from Jews saying, why is the right not standing with Israel? I'm like, honestly, guys, where were you when all the white people were called for death?
Yeah.
Like, where were you when the University of Chicago said we need to have a class against whiteness, right?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of like liberal Jews were funding this stuff, and we've said that on this show. And so excuse us while we're a little bit less. I mean, like, again, we're supporting Israel, but when our enthusiasm wanes, when I don't know, like white people it's been in vogue to kill us.
Yeah. We have like people go on these like, you know, stabbing frenzies, or, you know, they'll shoot cops, and it's very clearly driven by, you know, this like vocal, like kind of deranged anti-white animus in the media, which has been highlighted.
Institutionalized.
Yes. I do think, you know, you can pull that back and say, you know, even if they didn't realize it till now, and, you know, to quote another Bible verse, you know, it's like you pay the same wage to the laborer, even if he only comes in the afternoon. And, you know, it's good if they realize it through this lens. But there is definitely frustration from, you know, Tucker shows it, and a lot of other people are showing it, that, yeah, it's like you know, you didn't see what was extremely obvious until this new incident. And a lot of people are upset about that.
Yeah.
Whether it's fair or whether that means you shouldn't, you know, it should change how you feel about this current issue. I think that can be debated, of course, but so, it's definitely a very jarring evolution to see. And you're seeing a lot more vocal criticism of, I guess, of Israel and how people feel about it than I have ever remember in my lifetime.
Well, yeah. And then there's also this moral expectation of you must now fight for Israel. You must now fight for this very hard and aggressively, which is fine. Everyone has issues they care about. But then we're like, well, time out, guys. I mean, weren't you also just simultaneously on board for the Floyd stuff, the CRT stuff, you know, and now you want us to come into the arena?
Well, and I think this is the point, right? And I just dropped in the chat about how some of America's biggest corporate leaders are like, meanwhile, while all this is going on, right, and any distraction that's going to take place in the media is going to happen, the biggest corporate leaders in America are plotting the CCP in San Francisco. So, and they're doing this whole thing. But this is the point. I think that's the very important element in how we frame this and talk about this is, hey, if none of these other things, these other problems that you've allowed to metastasize have grown, then maybe people would have a lot more energy to be able to do that. But we're fighting a multifaceted war here where you've allowed for the anti-white rhetoric and the burning down of our cities to exist.
Yes.
You have now allowed the CCP into our country where they're literally, again, and many of these leaders of these corporations are Jewish, by the way. Where's the conversation about that? I don't think the CCP is going to be on our side in the defense of Israel, last I checked.
Yes, exactly.
So what are you doing? What are we doing? So how about getting on our side a little bit more? How about, you know, many, many prominent leaders in the Jewish community recognizing that you have more friends in the Republican sphere and the conservative sphere than you do on the Democrat side.
And there is some positive movement. Mark Rowan, Leon Kopperman have, you know, pulled gifts from University of Pennsylvania. We're starting to see more and more, you know, traction there. But the big one now, Blake, is the richest man on the planet.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's the second topic here. So obviously we have the fight between, you know, Ben and Candace, but the same time this is happening, literally the same minutes we're texting back and forth about both, there's, you know, Elon Musk is on Twitter all the time, or X, I guess we should be respectful to his new name. He's on it all the time. He's replying to all these people.
Wow,
and it just goes incredibly viral. So kind of for full context, there was this ad that aired on, it was airing on television, but it was posted to Twitter, and it was sort of this very, yes. So this is the clip that got it going. And
okay.
So this is an advertisement. It's about a minute long, but it's, let's just play it. 78.
I saw what you've been posting. Hitler was right. I didn't teach you that. You hide behind your screen, spewing all this hatred and ugliness. You got something you want to say? Get out of the truck and say it to their faces.
Is that ADL?
It was Stand Up to Jewish Hate. I can't remember.
I think that is a project at ADL.
Okay. And so a lot of people got...
It's a powerful ad.
A lot of people got really angry. I didn't think it was bad.
It doesn't anger. I'm just saying cinematically, objectively, that's powerfully done.
So what people got angry about is they thought this fueled what's kind of a trope in the media, if you want to use that term, which is, you know, it's like this, you know, it's this white dad and his white kid, like very normal American. And, you know, kind of mainstreaming the idea that like, oh, yeah, the source of anti-Semitism in American life is, you know, normie Americans who love Hitler and want to do the second Holocaust.
Well,
and, you know, people saying like, no, the source of, you know, most anti-Semitism and especially the most violent, deranged anti-Semitism is, you know, a lot of, you know, groups that we've brought into America recently that have been coddled by the left, you know, the Ilhan Omar of the world, the Rashida's Tlaib of the world. And like, that's the actual source of anti-Semitism in American life, especially the people who are going to do something really vicious. You know, the people who are throwing rocks and vandalizing, you know, synagogues and all of that. And instead, they sort of direct it again at the safe target, which is just normal Americans who in reality are just like, no one has ever been more pro-Jewish and pro-Israel than just, you know, the normal American white middle class.
So I want to know after that ad, how many more Googles of Hitler was right are going to be afterwards. And the follow-up ad, which was, there were 140,000. Well, yeah, because of your ad. your ad. So how many of that 70,000 did you guys actually instigate?
And so then this leads to, just real quick, so that's what the video was. And then Elon Musk's tweet, which is...
was he responding to the video?
So it happens as 86. So some guy I've never heard of, Breaking Bot, the artist formerly known as Eric, he tweets this. Okay, Jewish communities have been pushing the exact kind of dialectical hatred against whites that they claim to want people to stop using against them. I'm deeply dis... crap, I don't have the whole tweet here. I'm deeply disinterested in giving the tiniest bleep now about Western Jewish populations coming to the disturbing crud. Can we get the rest of this?
Let me pull it up.
This is too confusing. People can't track this. You got to be more precise.
Okay, so the point is, this guy is essentially tweeting that Jewish groups have stoked anti-white hatred rather than put the focus on, as he says, I think, hordes of minorities who have been brought into the U.S. who have actual more anti-Semitic views. And then all that happens is Musk replies, you have said the actual truth.
Okay, let's summarize. What is the, so this tweet that he said the actual truth is the following, that Jewish people have done what?
That they have pushed dialectical hatred against whites.
Okay, so that is largely true, isn't it?
Well, so dialectical hatred is sort of, it's like a weird buzzword. That's sort of saying they have this like Talmudic drive towards hating whites, I think, which that's kind of a weird take. But I think the basic idea that there are, especially on the left, like the ADL, that there have been publicly, overtly Jewish organizations that have promoted left-wing stuff that favors like open borders for the United States, while also...
So I think what Elon was focusing on here to defend Elon, because I mean, I wouldn't say that every Jewish person hates white people. I don't think that's fair. So I don't. I don't know what Elon will have to defend himself, but I do think that it's fair to say, hold on a second, there are major institutions funded by Jewish people, colleges and nonprofits, have been the biggest sponsors intellectually and politically of the importation of the third world into the West and of anti-white sentiments. Jack or Tyler first?
Well, yeah. I was just going to say real quick, in corporations, right? And then also the large Jewish populations that have a responsibility to protect their own community and to stand against this type of stuff, where this is happening in inner cities, where there are larger Jewish populations as well. New York, yes. Philadelphia, a lot in the Northeast.
Well, and so Jack, I mean, just for example, BLM is a great example of this, right? So Jack, what was Elon saying? This is I'll be honest, this is a weird tweet. I've read it three or four times. It doesn't, I don't think it's easy to understand what this guy was. I sort of get it, right? But Jack, you gotta interpret it. Again, I'm not a moron, so you gotta help me out here. Like dialectical hatred. I mean, I know what that means, but it doesn't resonate.
Yeah, I think in the context, keep in mind that this tweet is a response to the video which we just played. So this is commentary on
that's helpful to know. Okay.
And so the commentary point being, and I threw this out there as well earlier. So this is a Bob Kraft funded video, funded through this organization, Stop Anti-Jewish Hate. Then they put out this video that's promoting the Roscoe's from Arkansas trope. So I call the Roscoe trope. This was created by the professor, Canadian professor Gad Said, who said that Roscoe's from Arkansas have from the river to the sea tattooed on their forehead. And I responded to him saying, I don't think it's Roscoe's from Arkansas that are marching in these pro-Palestine, pro-Hamas marches across the West, storming Westminster Abbey, by the way, last night, Gad. And then he blocked me for saying that.
Yes.
It's a bizarre thing.
And so, like, if I can just finish. And so what I think Elon is pointing out here is that there is a sort of cognitive dissonance, because they're attacking a group, which, by the way, by and large, probably when you're talking about the South and the Midwest, that's a lot of evangelicals, a lot of Baptist, Southern Baptist Convention. This is a very pro-Israel, like probably the most pro-Israel group in America. These are also salt of the earth people. They're not the ones that you should be worried about. But unfortunately, it is the people that we've been importing into this country. And probably, and Trump, of course, has been out there saying we should look at deportations, canceling visas. Many people have all, studies are also coming out now saying that a lot of the organizers of these events actually are here on student visas or otherwise temporary visa to the United States. And so we should be looking at pulling those things, because we are actually importing people into our, and let's just say, civilization, that are not part of it, that don't share our values, and that are actually for attacking it and the things that we hold dear. It's as simple as that. And so I think when you look at, in terms of this, I think what Elon is actually saying here is that you guys need to redirect fire.
Yeah, you can't have your cake and eat it too.
Yes.
Like, and this is the point too. We just saw, and this is, again, to refocus this, forget even the people from outside the country who are coming into this country via our university systems and getting visas to attend, that have all of these really radical viewpoints that support an anti-Jewish state. Here is the bigger issue. Is like, you look at ASU the other night. We have had some really incredible student leaders that we've supported through Turning Point USA that have defended against BDS for years. This last week at Arizona State University, swing state Arizona, Arizona State University, there is a push to pass a BDS resolution, which hasn't been passed in like 10 years, mainly because of what's going on. Outside the windows, when the student body president gets up and says, we're not doing this, everyone go home, which was a great, great kid, great move. They start throwing rocks outside. Start throwing rocks at the windows. Those aren't kids from international homes. You know who those are? Those are white, ultra-liberal, ultra-Marxist kids who have been completely indoctrinated through the universities at these mega state-funded university campuses here in the United States. And so you have to look at this and go, you look at the Soviet mantra, the CCP mantra. They want chaos. They want division from within. They want to support this craziness. This is happening.
Where I will disagree with the tweet is I don't agree with this and this part, because I had to I don't think this is well written. I'll be honest. It sounds like someone who's trying to be too smart. I'll be honest. It doesn't. I've read this 3 or 4 times. If you have to read something 4 times, it's on them, not you. That's the Dennis Prager rule for consumption. No, it's true.
Yeah.
He taught me that. He's where he said, quote, I'm deeply disinterested in giving the tiniest, you know, S-H-I-T – now,
incorrect use of disinterested, by the way. It's
that's what I'm saying. This is not well written. I don't know who this person is, but about Western Jewish populations coming to the disturbing realization that those hordes of minorities that support flooding their country don't exactly. I disagree. I actually do support. I am interested in Jewish people waking up. I don't agree with that. Am I a little bit like, where have you been? Yeah. At the same time, I think it's good if Jews are pulling their money from universities. Yes. So I don't agree with that. That's where he's like, I'm deeply disinterested.
There's this huge bitterness to it.
No, but why would you be
if Elon is saying the truthful part is that Jewish donors have primarily turned a blind eye to anti-white, anti-Western stuff to support elitist institutions, and they thought that – okay, fine.
Yeah.
But the part of the tweet I don't like is I'm actually super interested in Jews waking
it's
up.
It's so bitter. Like, you were mad for years that these groups were like – funding all of this stuff while you're like, guys, it's all going to blow up in your face. And now it's blown up in their faces. And a lot of people are realizing
that was
a huge mistake.
I think we should support any community waking up, though, right? I don't think we should be like, no, I'm not interested in your awakening.
Yeah. Just like, can you go back? I want to go back to not liking you.
Such a good point.
Yeah. And so, all right. So now we have to talk about the fire, because we don't really know what Elon's talking about here, because he kind of
he does follow up tweets that make it
what is that thread?
Okay. So he talks about, if you have it, Jack, go ahead and bring it up. Otherwise, I'll try to race to bring it up here. Because he does some follow up tweets that just clarify that he's talking about the ADL as opposed to other stuff. Let me try to find it quickly. Tyler, you talk while
I bring it up. I can continue here. So again, they're saying it's anti-Semitic and all this.
I got it.
And I just the part of the paragraph that I think is 100% true. Jewish communities have been pushing the exact type of, forget this dialectical, you're being too cute by half men.
Yeah.
Hatred. Okay, let's just get rid of that word. You don't understand Hegel probably, so just get out of the way. Jewish communities have been pushing the exact kind of hatred against whites that they claim to want people to stop using against them. That is true.
True.
Right? The next part is you're not interested in people waking up. I don't like that. So
that's just as elitist.
It's kind of elitist. It's also, as Blake said, it's bitter. And I don't like bitterness in our politics. If blacks want to wake up against the Democrats, God bless them. If Jews want to wake up against the left, God bless them. Will it actually stick? I don't know. Okay. Then there's this tweet from Elon.
Okay. So first he tweets, the ADL unjustly attacks the majority of the West, despite the majority of the West supporting the Jewish people and Israel. This is because they cannot, by their own tenets, criticize the minority groups that are their primary threat. It is not right, and it needs to stop. He talks a bit more, and then there's another reply that he does. Again, at the risk of being repetitive, I am deeply offended by ADL's messaging and any other groups who push de facto anti-white racism or anti-Asian racism or racism of any kind. I'm sick of it. Stop now. And in the midst of this,
honestly, bless him for saying
in the midst of all this, he replies to another tweet where he says, when people talk about decolonization, they mean destroying like the Jewish state. And they mean a Jewish genocide. And that's unacceptable.
Yes.
He's right. And so he's just very much this guy in the middle saying, like, I don't like anti-Semitism and I don't like anti-white racism or anti-Asian racism. They're all bad. And then you have, you know, these political actors in the media like blowing up at him. So Jake Tapper replies last night, right after this happens, Elon Musk pushing unvarnished anti-Semitism. What would varnished anti-Semitism be, by the way? Unvarnished anti-Semitism at a time of rising anti-Semitism.
People get so mad on Twitter, their grammar just disappears.
And he's like, rising anti-Semitism and violence against Jews. Elon Musk is the real sinister actor here. And then Yair Rosenberg over at The Atlantic puts out Elon Musk's disturbing truth. The billionaire affirmed the deadliest anti-Semitic conspiracy theory in recent American history.
Very fast. They did this all very fast.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost as if, you know.
Well, Yair Rosenberg has been obsessed with Musk for months. So he had another headline all the way back in May.
Yeah, this is totally a setup.
When criticizing George Soros is not inherently anti-Semitic, but casting him as an avatar of evil is.
Wait, so George Soros funds all of the woke stuff that has led to the most amount of anti-Semitism in America that we've had probably since, you know, pre-1940.
That's correct.
And they can't take this. This is the awakening that's happening in the back dark closets of newsrooms right now, which is like, holy crap. We're like losing ground now with Jews. We're losing ground with blacks. We're losing ground with Hispanics. And Donald Trump's going to see maybe like a 5 to 10 point spike in all these communities and inner cities. Like we are in really big trouble, like really big trouble, because that's the only way they can survive when they don't have to worry about, when you look at how they have to chase their votes and everything else, this is all they care about. They care about these issues as it pertains to the next election. And so it's really eye opening.
Yeah. And what I think is the bigger takeaway, again, because I've reread that tweet now for the sixth time. I wish Elon would have picked a different tweet because it's not that smart. It is some good, some bad, is that the world's richest man is identifying anti-white racism and anti-Asian racism as a moral cancer. Jack, that's an Overton window win that literally during Floydapalooza, during the race riots, if you would have told us 3 years later, the wealthiest man on the planet would be talking about anti-white racism. We were, Jack, you and I together, we were on an island on that with very few allies, right? in the calendar year of 2020 talking about the war on white people, you know, black squares, and now the world's wealthiest man is saying, by the way, this is a moral toxin. Let's just kind of take a step back. Something we're doing is working as far as moving the – forget all the political stuff. We'll sort that out later. This is a huge advancement.
Charlie,
right, Jack?
You know, let's take it even back further than that. Let's look at – so we just crossed the one-year mark of Elon purchasing Twitter, renaming it X.com. Has the propensity for freedom of speech increased or decreased in that 1 year? It's magnanimously increased. It's so huge. It's absolutely enormous, the fact that people are now able – and now – and again, people will say, well, these are – you know, these are controversial takes. People are just being more controversial. I disagree, because when we're talking about freedom of speech, when the founders – you know, not to get all like boomer con on everybody, but when the founders were talking about freedom of political speech, they obviously meant things that were not politically correct to say, but may actually be true. And so Elon, he's the kind of guy, because he has this sort of engineering mind, this engineering background, you know, he just wants to solve the problem. He doesn't care about all the, you know, the shibboleths in between. He doesn't care about taboos. He doesn't care about social niceties. He just wants to solve the problem. When he's, you know, he wants to put people on Mars, right? What's the best way to put people on Mars? I don't care what race, color, gender the team is of scientists that are building the rockets and building the colonies. I just want to put people on Mars. So he's laser focused on something like that. And when you have that type of mind and you look, and then someone else comes to you and says, oh, well, we need to make sure that we have this quotient and this quotient. You're not allowed to use that verb. You know, yeah, Trump mentions the word, used the word vermin the other day, and somehow it's immediately connected to Hitler, when it's obviously just a word that kind of popped into his mouth because he was talking about people that he viewed as pests, right? He was talking about Antifa. He was talking about communists, right? There's no direct connection whatsoever. It doesn't matter. And Vivek Ramaswamy is forced to then, you know, try to respond to this on CNN. It's ridiculous. The whole thing is ridiculous on its face, and it always has been. So the fact that Elon bought X, which I don't think is something that anyone, Elon included, could have actually predicted prior to it actually happening, I would say not only has been an unmitigated force for good in the world, it's also driven us towards, number one, more freedom, which, by the way, is driving peace in the world. I would say,
seriously,
you know what? Elon Musk, Nobel Peace Prize. Go for it.
Honestly, the liberation of X is one of the biggest wins for liberty in a generation. What Elon did,
yes,
is what billions of dollars of money in conservative nonprofits never could have done. I mean, would you agree? I mean,
not in a million years.
It will go down even if tomorrow, like
write another white paper.
Even if today the FBI came in and shut down all of X, what has already been accomplished, the ideas that are now allowed to get out there, is already significantly enriched our discourse.
Yes, and this far into 2024 too.
The closer we get to the election, I mean, they're going to just try to shut that thing
and
down.
And the obsession with taking them out is, I think, really hurting them. Because, like, first of all, it's just inherently absurd to say that Elon Musk is an anti-Semite. Like, how many Semites do you think that Elon Musk has had to employ at Tesla, at SpaceX, at any of his companies to make them successful?
It's a shallow, stupid argument.
I'll bet, like, 70% of Elon Musk's friends are literally Jewish, probably. Like, in, like, Austin tech scene? Okay, yeah. And they're like so, and it's exposing how political it is that they're so obsessed with taking Musk down because he brought, you know, free speech back, that he's had these successful companies, that he's sort of not on the, you know, on the Democratic, you know, they can't keep him on their plantation, as it were. And so they're, you know, they've been obsessed for months with taking him down. And so they're seizing on this so immediately, you know, Jake Tapper comes out, Yair Rosenberg comes out, and they're like, they're screaming anti-Semitism at him. So it's immediate, and on Drudge. And so it's immediately exposing that this is just a weaponized political attack on him. It's going to fail. And then it's going to, I think, cause a wider realization of this. And then also, you know, as far as, you know, donors matter, Elon Musk is the richest man in the world. He has a ton of friends who are also billionaires. I think in the small, much smaller social world of ultra rich Americans who are invested in politics, I think this is going to cause a major revision in how a lot of them maybe view the, you know, elite Democrat media establishment, both in terms of seeing the hostility they can bring against you, how they don't share your interests, the threat that they can be to you. And yeah, maybe if they destroy Musk, they can sort of terrorize these people into quiet, into publicly acquiescing. I think behind the scenes, there's going to be a lot more wealthy Americans who are very opposed to this. I can hope anyway.
Go ahead, Jack.
No, I was going to actually ask you something, because there's a point that you made recently. It's a trend, I would say, that you identified that I think actually is playing out here. Do you think that this is an example of, by the way, Blake, you mentioned, Jewish people that Elon's friends, very close friends with David Sachs. They're clearly, work together very, very closely. They've done a lot together. I'd love to see them, on a stage together, maybe at a stage somewhere soon. Charlie, you mentioned something before about how it's like this Gen X uprising. That's sort of correct. There's this Gen X pragmatism versus the sort of like baby boomer moralism that we're seeing go on right now. Do you think what Elon is doing is playing into that right now? Is this trend?
I have this repeated theory where I think there is this volcano of Gen X that is going to erupt, and it is – they're so sick of baby boomers. They've always been under the shadow of baby boomers. Mm-hmm. They're also exhausted that millennials are basically overtaking them. They are the closest thing to a forgotten generation in the modern era ever. Totally. And they actually wield a significant amount of energy and power. And right now they're upticking as far as their top of their career. So just so everyone knows what ages we're talking about, people born between 1965 and 1980, right? Yeah. So specifically like mid-70s is when they were born. So these are people in their late 40s, early 50s, or late 50s, right? So they're definitely culturally different than baby boomers. They have not had adequate representation in corporate life, in politics, in media. Ron DeSantis is Gen X, for example. Elon Musk is Gen X, right? And so my theory continues that
Tucker.
Tucker is Gen X. They view the world completely differently than baby boomers. They feel as if they've been passed over, because it's true. Yeah. They've been waiting their turn for their whole life. They've been waiting like, okay, eventually we're gonna be in charge. And it just hasn't materialized that much. And they see the country falling apart. And I think the right wing tilt of Gen X is going to be one of the most promising political trends. We see it with, you say Peter Thiel?
Peter Thiel, 1967.
Yeah. So, I mean, but you could go one by one by one, right? And they are
Joe Rogan.
Yes. I mean, you go through the list. You're like, wow, that's a pattern. And the pattern is really exciting. And so anyway, the point is this, is that Elon Musk in some ways is almost pushing back against institutional boomer norms. And that's what's really driving this, is that, him even signaling this out is, I had a boomer come up to me, and a great donor we just had an amazing lunch with, really amazing guy.
People get so mad when we talk this.
This is not even.
You're just trying to categorize the situation.
And this is not even a bad thing. And he says, man.
It's not an attack.
He says, we would not even be allowed to say the word Jew when I grew up. He said, how are you guys even able to say this? And he's like, it kind of makes me uncomfortable as a boomer, Charlie, when you say Jewish dollars are funding left-wing stuff. He's like, it's true. He's like, you're so courageous. And I was like, what are you talking about? I was like, what world do you live in? Like, I love Jewish people, but I'm also not going to like censor my speech because of some sort of cultural sort of Damocles. And he was, and God bless him, he was so honest. He was like, I don't understand how you guys are able to talk about this. He's like, I'm afraid that I'm playing into some trope. And he said, if I would have said what you guys say now, he's like, I would have lost my job, been canceled, censored, and kicked out to the curb. Elon is kind of looking at boomer norms. It's like, nah, not going to do that, Blake.
So it's just another dimension of this, which is APAC, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, a major lobby group in the U.S., very pro-Israel, of course, and they've sort of, it's recently been revealed that they're gearing up to spend $100 million in the 2024 congressional races, and their objective is to knock out the so-called members of the squad. AOC, Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib, Presley, there's a few others who've joined. Bowman, I think, is a member. And, obviously they're the left wing of the Democratic Party. They're some of the most critical of Israel. Tlaib, of course, just got censured in Congress, or at least they had, that did pass, yes. And so their idea is, okay, we're going to unseat them. Well, obviously that means you're going to bankroll people in the Democrat primaries. They're all in incredibly blue seats. No Republican's going to win those. And I think it's very telling that that's their priority, that they're sort of, they're thinking, okay, there's this bubbling up of anti-Israel sentiment in the Democratic Party, but like, no, the Democratic Party, that's, you know, that's our party. We're just going to, you know, have a really highly paid challenger and they'll knock these people off and we'll be fine. And I think what they'll find is this is going to be a lot harder than they expect. They're going to be, I think, very surprised by how little enthusiasm there is in these hyper blue districts for this sort of priority for knocking these people out. And so they'll be caught off guard by that. And even if they win, they'll just see more of this bubbling up because this is the trend in the Democratic Party. But they would rather do this than just, I think, accept what is most obvious, which is the most naturally pro-Jewish population in America is just the right.
Well, the Roscoes.
But hold on.
The
let me
Roscoes
play,
from Arkansas.
Hold on a second. Let me play devil's advocate here. So I had a different gut reaction. So the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, APAC, is going to spend $100 million to go after AOC, Ilhan Omar, Jamal Bowman, Ayanna Pressley, some other black woman that I don't know, probably a lesbian, Rashida Tlaib, and then another black woman, Ayanna Pressley. So it's all. So my initial reaction was completely different. I'm just going to be honest. I said, honestly, God bless moderate Jews for wanting to spend money against Democrats. Because, I mean, I guess, I guess my...
But they're spending on other Democrats, which... Okay,
no, I get that. But you and I both know then that Democrat on that, that's a fair point. That's a fair point. But I guess the question is, would you rather see AIPAC spend $100 million on the ADL or say, hey, we're going to go primary Marjorie Taylor Greene?
Yep.
Right. Or would I mean, I think it's a somewhat promising thing that they've identified. The AOC now has to go do fundraisers. She now has to go defend her turf, right? Now, let's talk politically, Tyler. This is probably a good thing. Misdirection of resources, right? Energy, time. Honestly, that's what I don't like about that Elon tweet that he responded to. Yep. I think it's a good thing that Jewish donors are at least signaling out Democrats as the problem. Am I thinking correctly about this, Tyler?
Yeah, totally. I mean, we're in a war. And when we lose, the worst, right, is when they're able to stack up their resources and attack nothing but Republicans. You have to, and this is really interesting. This is a really interesting point that we have to remind conservatives of all the time, is it's all directional. Like, you can't turn the ship, right, like that quickly on things. And so having attacks happen, Democrat on Democrat attacks happen, we need to lean into that, encourage that, help that, because that's exactly the core, the heartbeat of the problem. And remember that we grow more with, if as long as we're prepared, right, with the right resources, the right armies, our own preparation to actually support the right people, do the right thing, and get more, gain more conservative ground. But heading into 2024, this is really bad for Democrats because you already have vote splitting and ticket splitting happening with potentially our friend in West Virginia being out. You have Kyrsten Sinema here in Arizona. You've got, you know, the RFK Jr. I know we're divided on our opinion on that stuff. You've got, you know, Colonel West. You've got the Green Party nomination here. So you've already got so much splitting, so much resource redirection. And now the question is, it's really to me, Charlie, and this, I think this piggybacks on this conversation, which is not so much are Democrats going to attack each other and how much, but how prepared are we going to be to take advantage of that situation?
Yeah. And I just, having spent time around AIPAC, to be honest, and I've been around there, you know, Tyler, I think you have too, right?
Yep.
There's a ton of Democrats at AIPAC, right?
It's mostly Democrats.
And mostly Democrats.
80% Democrats.
Yeah. And they're Jewish Democrats. So Blake, it's not the best use, but isn't it better that Jewish Democrats are going to go deploy money to go at least cause a headache and havoc amongst who we consider to be some of the least desirable political creatures in America?
Oh, for sure. For sure. Definitely. It is an improvement over what, you know, maybe the worst possible thing they could do is. But we can hope for more. It's I do think it would be better if they would just recognize that, you know, the Democratic Party has become and is going to continue to become something very hostile to their interests. And I think it's, sort of a, it's a recurring issue, you know, 20 years ago. So you might not remember this, but about around 2004, Philip Roth, a pretty famous American novelist, wrote a book, The Plot Against America. The plot of the book is that it's a alt history novel where Charles Lindbergh wins the 1940 presidential election. And on the back of this wave of anti-Semitism in America emanating from Kentucky and the Dakotas and, you know, middle America, that we kind of have an almost Holocaust in America, and we like align with Nazi Germany. And the book is fundamentally pretty deranged because the premise of it is, again, that there's this huge reserve of Nazi-style anti-Semitism in middle America that, you know, if not for FDR, you know, it all would have bubbled up and it could have all been so horrible. And that doesn't accord with historical reality. Like, no, that's just not where anti-Semitism even was in America at the time. And no, it was not
it's
that
a mythology.
Yeah, it's a mythology. And it's, we're seeing it manifest today where, you know, we have these people who worry about the Roscoes who are supposedly going to do all this bad stuff. And I think it's really just what they do is they take normal political views, which is, you know, a lot of, you know, a lot of Jewish people are just liberal in the normal sort of way. You know, they favor more socialist policies, pro-choice, pro-gay marriage, pro-trans, normal stuff to be liberal on. But what they do is they take the fact that they disagree with middle Americans on those issues and they sort of transform it into they are anti-Semitic against us, when that's just not true. And in this case, it's leading them into a recurring political failure of not seeing where the real danger to them is of, you know, groups we've brought in that actually yes. are for real anti-Semitic, anti-Israel.
Yeah. And so that is an interesting question. So I had a call recently with a top level Jewish person in media who I really like, not Dennis Prager, somebody else. And if I were to say what he said, I would be called an anti-Semite, just to be clear. And I said, honestly, I want the truth. Do you think that a majority of American Jews can ever move right wing? And he said, no.
Yeah, but here's the point on what we just talked about, right? Which is, what is going to happen? I hate living in, you know, the what if this happens, but let's just go into this. They spend $100 million to try to take out any one of, or if all of the most awful members of Congress, right, at AIPAC. So let's think about this for a second. The moderate Democrats who run AIPAC are spending $100 million, as you pointed out, for the right reasons to take them out. What is going to be the result? None of them are going to get taken out. Maybe one, that'll be a huge victory
but
for
they're
them.
They're going to have to raise money to defend themselves. The squad.
No. But here, my point is that moderate Democrats, when they spend all of that money to try to take them out, there's one of two things that's going to happen. They're either going to give up and retreat and then never do it again, or they're going to get angry because it's going to become a more hostile situation between those two, and they're going to try even harder. And then it's going to move beyond just that gang. It's going to move beyond them, and it's going to go into members of Congress who just pacify those members, right? And then that's it. So I'm actually really hopeful that you talk about the conversion process. Are we ever going to be in our lifetime see a predominant, you know, Republican Jewish force? Probably not. But is there a good chance that, you know, this could shift 20 points over the course of our lifetime? Because of that battle, because you're going to have more. We're not going to have fewer AOCs, guys. We're just not. There's going to be more.
Yes. And honestly, if the AIPAC wants to raise hundreds of millions of dollars for the rest of the time to fight Marxists and just like cause discord, and so that they do not get out of primaries without bruising. Good.
That's my theory.
That's a good thing, though.
My theory is that that's going to happen.
No, that's great.
Your point that you brought up is exactly this is going to happen more and more.
Yeah, if American Jews want to unite their political and cultural and financial power and say, honestly, if you're a Marxist that hates Israel, we're going to run ads. You might survive, but we're going to bruise you up and bloody you up. Like, honestly, that's a much better direction of resources than AIPAC saying, you know what, we're going to give $100 million to Priorities Action USA or Biden's reelection.
No, here's
some
the question.
Sort of weird thing.
Will that make anti-Semitism in the U.S. worse? Which is, if they're doing this in the Democratic Party and they
probably,
make it so,
but that's not like the like, top con- that's not
for
the,
sure for sure like I don't mind the Democratic it, Party
it,
having
it,
problems
it will only play into false tropes that Jews are running American politics.
Exactly.
That I say false tropes, media matters. But that's what you're getting at, right?
Yeah. So, like, you'll have the future AOCs, the future Ilhan Omar, and they're going to be growing up in a political environment where, like, all the, you know, all of the new American majority, as they are, they're all saying to each other, like, yeah, the reason we can't have, you know, single payer or any of these things that we care about is that anytime a real progressive runs in a Democratic primary,
yep,
the Jews come in and like blow them up. That,
yes.
I could see that trope, that story being one that takes root on the far left. And it'll be very interesting. I think it'd be bad for the Democratic Party and therefore good for America, but it's also bad for America in a way. Like we don't, you know, you don't want anti-Semitism or anti-anybody-ism to be this rising force in American politics.
Here's a more interesting point too. The AIPAC lobby, these moderate Democrats are 100% in the same car with the Chamber of Commerce types, like the National Chamber of Commerce, all of that, which is an interesting perspective too. When you talk about, you get into the unions, how the unions are becoming more attracted to the Republican Party, how there's a shift there that's happening, and the Chamber of Commerce is becoming significantly more moderate Democrat than they are becoming more moderate Republican. And this is a big question, is can, you know, the America First unit within the conservative movement attract enough union types of regular Americans while at the same time being able to manage the Chamber of Commerce and moderate Democrats like in AIPAC, the pro-Israel lobby, to just attack Democrats?
I want to tell everyone about Noble Gold Investments really quick. Noble Gold Investments is amazing. For those of you that want to buy gold, go to noblegoldinvestments.com. I think we have a special promo code, right, guys, for this show? Let's get that. I believe it's promo code Charlie, if I'm not mistaken. Promo code Charlie. They're seeing a big surge of gold buyers. The money printing is continuing from billionaires to multimillionaires to institutional investors. Noble Gold Investments is seeing a massive gold buying spree. So use promo code Charlie to bag a free 5 ounce America the Beautiful coin. Check it out right now at noblegoldinvestments.com. Promo code Charlie at noblegoldinvestments.com. Noblegoldinvestments.com is incredible. The only people who are not afraid are those invested in gold with Noble Gold Investments. Gold is the most stable asset outside of any government control. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com. That is noblegoldinvestments.com. Check it out right now. NobleGoldInvestments.com. I think we lost Jack. That's okay. He had to go do a pre-tape. The big takeaway of all this, though, guys, that I just want to reinforce, the topics that we are now able to discuss comfortably is thanks to Elon's liberation of X.
Yeah, we still on our show, we always get these emails like, I don't trust Elon Musk. He's going to take
over. I'm so exhausted with these. Like, take a win, guys.
Judge them by their fruits. And the fruits of Elon Musk in the past year.
Take
really,
a win.
You know, yeah, he's done the shift in what you are allowed to say, what you're even allowed to email us, whatever, is so dramatic. It has been so positive. It has been everything we hoped for when he bought it. And then people just complain, you know, he's still a Gen X guy who smokes weed. Okay. I don't like the weed either, but is a positive outcome. And compared to what every other billionaire has been doing,
there should be a sign. You don't have to hate everybody.
Yeah.
And the Charlie Kirk show.
You're allowed to be happy. You're allowed to have a good mood.
No,
sometimes.
I'm not.
No.
All right. Till next week, everybody, email us freedom@charliekirk.com. I'm sure the Ben and Candace drama will continue. We'll see if Elon is still alive a week from today. Keep committing thought crimes on Thought Crime. See you guys next week. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
We get it. You're busy. You don't have time to waste on the mainstream media. That's why Salem News Channel is here. We have hosts worth watching, actually discussing the topics that matter. Andrew Wilkow, Dinesh D'Souza, Brandon Tatum, and more. Open debate and free speech you won't find anywhere else. We're not like the other guys. We're Salem News Channel. Watch anytime on any screen for free 24/7 at snc.tv and on Local Now, Channel 525.